Hello, and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast, episode 99.
Who are you?
Who am
Wait,
I?
We started already?
I don't know. Sometimes you introduce yourself, sometimes you don't. So.
Oh. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn.
I'm Jason Jones.
And I'm Parker Dillman.
And we're here to sell you a new car. Well, actually, no, that's not our topic tonight.
That was a free iPad.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. Right. Jones got a free iPad for this car. Actually, I hear ads on the radio. It's like you buy a car, you get like a free TV. Of course, TVs are so cheap now. They can just give them away.
Well, I was just going to say, I remember a long time ago, some friends of mine, they bought a Kia. This was probably like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it came with a trunk full of like soda and snacks. I should not. It was useful, but it was just kind of funny.
Say that 15 years ago, and I'm like, man, that must have happened in the 90s. But no, that's would be in the mid-2000s now?
It's like 2002-ish, yeah.
Yep.
Jones, do you remember when Yugo started selling cars in America?
I remember them existing and not doing particularly well.
They had like a 2-for-1 car deal. Like you got a little car. Like I think that happened. Let me see. Yugo. Let me just look.
Well, they were super cheap cars too.
Yeah, they were pretty inexpensive. Well, no,
and cheap they were crap.
Cheap is actually the good word for that.
Yeah, they were actually too expensive still for the quality. But...
Well, because they had to import them. They didn't build them over here.
Oh, no. Actually, correction.
Well, no, I'm just saying the car was a piece of shit. So even though it was cheap relative to other cars, it was still expensive for what you were getting.
Yeah, I just Googled this. And one of the results is, here's why the Yugo is one of the worst cars ever made. But also, buy a new Cadillac, get a Yugo thrown in for free.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow, there must have been like Cadillac dealers that were also Yugo dealers. That's a really strange combination.
Wow, it was only $4,000?
And what was that, 1978 money?
No, 1986. Oh, let's go to inflationcalculator.org.
Apparently they still made them up to 2008.
In Yugoslavia? Or
yeah, Serbia.
What used to be Yugoslavia, I should say.
Yeah, so it was still being built in Serbia until 2008.
Wow. That would be an $8,000 brand new car, which is still, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
You can't buy a new car for that these days.
Well, even a used car that's $8,000 might be pushing it.
Yeah,
like, for actually being decent, yeah.
Right.
I mean, thank you, Cash for Clunkers.
Yeah, no doubt. Anyway, so our topics tonight does not involve Yugos necessarily. So first of all,
we'll make it come that way.
We're going to have a tribute to Bill Paxton, who died, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was some bullshit.
Yeah, that was
read that this morning. I was like, what?
Yeah, that was the worst way to wake up on Sunday.
Yeah. So Bill Paxton is clearly, like, the greatest actor of all time. And, he died at the age of 61 after heart surgery complications.
Yes.
But thousands of other less worthy celebrities still draw breath.
And tweet every day.
Why, God? Why Bill Paxton? Why not Kim Kardashian? What does Kim Kardashian do for anyone besides Kanye West?
Oh, yes.
So we're going to talk about Bill Paxton and why he's so great and how he's the only person on Earth that can deliver lines. There's some lines he's said no one else could have said them.
Well, of course, you have a special bond with him because of the pinball machine that you made based upon him. So,
actually, the machine that got you into pinball.
Yes, yeah, the Bill Paxton tribute game. Yeah, I had so many people yesterday on I didn't go on Facebook because I don't like Facebook anymore, but Twitter and text messages, and everyone's like, oh man, you read that Bill Paxton died? And it's like, Jesus Christ, it's not like my dad died or something, but I mean, it sucks, but it's not like I'm going to cry about it, but. He was a really fun actor.
So we'll
talk about that. Next topic, Battlefield 1. Is it the best Battlefield since Bad Company 2?
I like how you put that in there. Since this one.
it's got to be a question, else people won't bother to listen. You know, we have to make it...
I mean, bad company, too. I mean, it's, you know, unquestioned greatness. So
BenHeck.com podcast, now with more clickbait.
All right, so speaking of clickbaity titles, the next topic. I've never played Mass Effect. Even though a lot of people have asked me to play it, I think I should make a tax when I'm president. It's going to be the, hey, Ben, have you played Mass Effect tax? And you can tell me to play Mass Effect, but you have to give me $1. And I'm going to put all of that into like the national treasury, and the debt will be paid off in about three days.
Nice.
So anyway, you guys have to convince me to play Mass Effect Andromeda, because I'm not going to play the old ones.
Yeah, you're not going to play the old ones?
No, because they're old. I don't want to play a 10-year-old game.
What kind of goddamn heretic are you?
You know, you say not, that. You said you would not play a 10-year-old game. I bet you if you booted up Bad Company 2, you would still play it.
Bad Company 2 is only like...
Not 10 years old.
I know, but if that game is 10 years old, he would still play it.
Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy the new one. I mean... is it the best one? Question mark. Stay tuned.
That's the thing, though. I don't even know if Mass Effect Andromeda is going to be any good. So,
but we know the first three are good.
So you're saying it can be a big steamy turd?
I mean,
hope not, but anything's possible.
I mean, Fallout 4 was a big steaming turd. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a. Well, maybe because it didn't hook me.
I liked it.
Taking up space on my hard drive and much else.
Can we talk about that game? Or maybe next time on episode 100, we can talk about Fallout 4.
We could talk about that.
Let's talk about all sorts of shit like usual.
That's true. Hey, I'm trying to have some structure this time. And the final topic, since it's coming out this week, we're going to yet again talk about the Nintendo Switch.
And then we're going to have to talk about the goddamn thing next time because it's going to come out and Parker's actually going to buy it.
It should be in my mailbox today, this week on Friday.
I can't wait for that thing to come out and just, you know, begin the disappointment for the Nintendo fans. Just get it over with, like ripping off a Band-Aid.
You know what? We talked about this last time, but it's to me a Zelda player. So.
Yes, and that's really from a business standpoint. Hey,
that's what they're banking on.
Spend $1 billion developing a piece of hardware when all people want is a software, which only costs a tenth of that.
Yeah.
What company in the right mind makes that choice? Oh, wait, Nintendo.
There's a lot of companies that do that, like Sony.
Yeah. Well, Sony's making money hand over fist, though, with their gaming division.
Well, like that's the only thing they have that does make money.
Exactly. Well, and their financial business.
Oh yeah, don't they own insurance companies and stuff that actually make good money?
Yeah. Ironically, I guess it's not ironic, but.
Hopefully they didn't insure Samsung.
I like Sony. I don't want to see them go away, but I think I don't think they're quite as dumb as Nintendo, but they're just too big. There's too many divisions. And so they have the diversity that Nintendo doesn't, but then they have like their television division pulling down their PlayStation division. Like I was watching a video. Apparently, like PlayStation 4 accounts for like 75% of their company's revenue at the moment.
Jeez. Holy crap!
And considering how many things Sony makes, that's not good.
I guess those Sony cameras, just the margin is so low on those.
Right, but remember, every cell phone has a Sony camera in it. I mean, they make
Oh, them. You mean the modules.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, most good cameras are Sony cameras.
Huh. I wonder if the Pixel has one. Probably does.
I don't know. All right, so why don't we start with the Bill Paxton tribute?
Bill Paxton, you know why he's such a great actor? Because he's a Texan.
Of course.
Sure, sounds good. End of case.
Yeah, I think I in the Bill Paxton pinball in the background on the back glass, I think it's either Dallas or Houston. There's like some big Texas city in the background because he's from Texas.
Yeah.
And he was
It's actually funny he was born in Fort Worth, I guess near Dallas, but
right. Well, you know, there was the I think he met James Cameron at Roger Corman Studios. I think that's where they first met.
Oh, yeah.
And
probably
so. Do you remember Dale's impression? Our friend Dale did an impression of James Cameron meeting Bill Paxton. You remember that?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
No.
Okay, so Dale's, this is his, this is how he envisioned it. Like, Bill Paxton walks up to James Cameron. They're both, like, you know, like 25 years old or whatever. You know, painting spaceships for Battle Beyond the Stars. And he's like, hey, you making some movies? I'll be in them.
I'll be in them.
Oh, okay. I do remember that. Isn't Cameron, like, sitting by a pool or something in this for some reason?
He's probably not hot tub.
Like, they're, like, all poor kids.
Yeah,
like,
back in those days, they didn't have that sort of luxury. But, yeah, I was, like, one of my coworkers, because, you know, I'm into movies and stuff. They messaged me today about it and all that. So we were kind of reminiscing over the Skype chat or whatever, and I was like, man, for me it's always like his True Lies performance is the one that I always go back to, where he's
the
playing
movie you
like
can't
this
buy on Blu-ray.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, actually I was saying, talking to my friends earlier, is True Lies is my favorite film that he's in.
Yeah, because it's like he just plays that sleazy car salesman, like pretending to be a spy to pick up women. It's just,
yeah, it's
like
it's
so perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Hey, maybe his death will actually get that on Blu-ray finally.
Maybe.
You know what I think it is? That a lot of people consider that movie to be misogynistic, and it also has terrorism in it. I think that's probably why we haven't seen it. But also The Abyss was like put in the dustpan of history as well for Cameron films.
Yeah, it's weird how his kind of...
The Abyss is the one where...
Underwater.
It's underwater, but they have the like underwater suits that has like the gel.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. They breathe the gel. And they actually filmed it underwater. But anyway, that one, that and True Lies basically haven't had a proper release since the DVD era.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some, like, rights issues or, like the music in it or something like that is holding up that problem.
I don't know what would be holding up The Abyss. I mean, I could see some of the other shit with True Lies, maybe, but The Abyss seems
didn't,
like
everyone
a
who made
one.
The Abyss hated it, and it also didn't make very much money, although it's considered to be a pretty good movie.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. I'm not a spy. I'm nothing. I'm Naval Lit.
I've got a little dick. It's pathetic.
That reaction could have gotten us both killed.
What the hell movie was that quote that you texted me today from? About the summer camp boner or whatever
was? That's from the movie Indian Summer, where...
I've never seen that.
Oh, you should. It's bizarre. It has Okay, so I'll tell you the plot of Indian Summer. So it's...
I've never seen that movie either.
All these, like, I don't know, like 30-somethings or 40-somethings, they get together and like, hey, let's go to the camp we went to as kids, right?
Okay.
And so it's got... he's in it. Julie Warner is in it. Remember her?
Oh, yeah.
Diane Lane. And Bill Paxton and Diane Lane were also both in Streets of Fire.
Nice.
Anyway, but the weird thing is... there's like this putzy, silent camp maintenance man, right?
Okay.
And every few scenes, it cuts to him, and it's like doo 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 doo, doo 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 doo. It like plays that music, and then he does something really stupid, and it's Sam Raimi.
What the hell?
That is bizarre.
Sam Raimi as like the silent, bumbling maintenance man.
Who the hell directed it?
I don't know. You'd have to look it up. And then at the end, Bill Paxton and Diane Lane. I think, I want to say like Alan Alda or one of those guys, like, is the guy who runs the camp. And he's like, I can't keep this open. And then Bill Paxton's like, let's do it, Diane Lane. Let's run the camp for future generations. But anyway, so in this movie, I think they're smoking pot and they're reminiscing their camp days. And
Mike Binder directed it and was the writer.
Oh, Mike Binder. Oh, okay. He did like The Upside of Anger and what else? Huh, interesting.
6.5 stars out of 10.
What's Sam Raimi's character named?
Are you asking me? I was searching to see if it was on Netflix.
Oh, I thought you were on IMDb.
Who?
Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi.
I don't see him on the cast.
Maybe he's uncredited. It's him, all right.
Oh, there he is. Stick Coder is his name.
All right. Well, anyway.
That's a name.
So they're reminiscing about camp, and like, you know, like their memories of camp. And Bill Paxton says with a complete straight face, "I got my first boner at camp." And then it cuts to like a flashback, and he's like, "I didn't know what to do, so I taped the sucker down." and then he's like, "But then I saw." And then he's like, then I saw like the name of some girl that he liked at the time, and the tape was no match. But like, no, nobody else could say lines like that. I mean,
that's
they really
pure couldn't. Bill Paxton.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't he ad-lib like the entire Aliens movie?
I kind of doubt that.
That's the rumors.
So. Hard to believe Cameron would allow that sort of.
Aliens was a pretty tightly written movie.
Yeah.
I mean, James Cameron is a very good screenwriter, a very efficient screenwriter. Now, what's some other good roles that he had?
I think, well, he directed that Frailty, which was pretty good.
And The Greatest Game Ever Played, starring Shia LaBeouf, which is actually a really good golf movie. Yeah, everyone remembers him from Twister, but, you know, that's kind of a non-role. If you ask me.
Oh, when Paxton says game over in Aliens, that was ad-libbed. It was not in the original script.
And that is like the most iconic line.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was talking about the movie Traveler.
Okay.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's a little scene movie, but it's Bill Paxton, and I think it was one of the early movies with Donnie Wahlberg or Marky Mark. Or was it Donnie Wahlberg or Marky Mark? I can't remember. Maybe you guys could look it up. Anyway, they're like these gypsy grifters, kind of. Like, okay. Scammy people. And one line that he had in it was, he was trying to, like, scam a waitress. He's like, "I see you've got a little Irish in you. Would you like a little more?"
Oh, wow.
He knew even then what they had.
Well, that was, like, 1996, so.
Oh, okay. He'd been around for a bit then.
Is it Traveler or Travelers?
Traveler, but with two L's.
Or Passengers.
Oh, you know what? Another really interesting. God, am I completely forgetting the name of this movie?
Which one?
The one I'm trying to explain.
Traveler? Yeah, it's TRAVELLER. It's got two L's in it for some reason.
With Bill Paxton.
Because that's how you spell Traveler.
Well, I bet she's spelling it with one L.
Oh,
like
there
I did
you,
it
yeah,
first.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you said for some reason, though.
Oh, it was Mark Wahlberg. So that was a very early Mark Wahlberg movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would have been.
Jones, stopped. I didn't create the English language. I just had to abide by its rules.
That was back when he was still, like, fresh off Funky Bunch days.
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
Little did we know we'd have to sit through 10,000 more Marky Mark movies each year after that.
Some of them are good.
All right, let's see here. Apparently he was in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare as a zombie.
He's in Spy Kids.
Yep.
Oh, God. Yeah, that thing.
Completely forgot about that movie series.
Despite the first one, I want to say the first one was actually pretty good. I remember seeing it.
But Bill Paxton was in the first one.
Oh, let's see. What are some great movies here? Oh, Vertical Limit. That's one where they're climbing the mountain. And he's like, did you think? The mountain was just going to lift up her skirt for us and let us in? Bill Paxton's in a movie. He just writes lines like that.
There's got to be shit like that where they're like, you know what, Bill? Just put your own spin on this, you know, whatever you feel like saying here.
Slipstream!
Going to a part of the slipstream we've never been to before.
Oh, directed by the guy who directed Tron. Yeah. Oh, and he's going to have sex with that lady, and she's like, I'm so bored with this body. Bore me to death. Oh my God. God, it's such great movies. Jones, have you ever seen Next of Kin?
No, I have not.
Oh, do you want it? Next of Kin is interesting. It's Patrick Swayze, and
That's right.
Well, look at the cast. It's got a really young Ben Stiller in it, a really young Helen Hunt. Liam Neeson plays a redneck. It's quite the film.
Oh yeah, I think you've told me about this one before, because I remember the Liam Neeson plays a redneck thing.
Yep. So Adam Baldwin, who's the Baldwin, who's not a Baldwin, Serenity Baldwin, he kills Bill Paxton, because Bill Paxton dies in a lot of movies, I guess coincidentally. And then Patrick Swayze, he's like used to be a redneck, and then he's like a big city cop, and then him and his redneck family like go and get revenge on the mob.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's like pre-John Wick, John Wick or something.
Yeah, kind of.
Which I did see chapter 2 of that, and that was awesome.
Let's see, what was he in?
Not that Paxton was in it, but still, him and Keanu were probably in something somewhere along the way.
Streets of Fire was actually before the.
Wait, Paxton was in Commando?
Yeah,
he's got one scene.
Yeah,
a scene. Okay.
Yeah, he's like. Attention, unidentified aircraft. You are not clear for approach. Or something like that. I know that because I put it in my Bill Paxton game.
Yeah.
So
it's when he's like going to that island or whatever. And
yeah, so he's just a guy working the radio. Yeah. So what I would do is I would watch Bill Paxton movies while I was working on things. And when I heard a good line, I would just go back and like record it into my laptop, because I had a laptop at the time that could record the system audio really easily to WAV file. So I've seen quite a few. I've probably seen an above average amount of Bill Paxton movies.
You've seen more of his movies than he did.
You know, I still want to watch that Hatfields and McCoy series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I put it on my watch list. I never got around to watching it, though.
Costner in that?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a good time.
Well, and of course he was in Titanic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Where he's like, I never understood the Titanic. I never let it in. I want the diamond.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he single-handedly saved the Apollo 13 moon mission. What's that line in Apollo 13 about, like, the constellation of urine? You remember? He says a line like that.
Don't remember that. I don't doubt that it happened, but I just don't remember.
It's like there's a scene where they eject their urine into space before everything goes wrong. And the script is like, one of the astronauts has to say it's constellation Uranus or something. It's like, I wonder which one of these three actors should say that.
I don't think they had to draw straws for that one.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, when you've got like... you know, schlub wannabes like Kevin Bacon and Tom Hanks in your space capsule, and someone has to talk about a urine.
Yeah.
Turned to Bill Paxton.
There's only one man who can handle this line.
Yeah. Wow. Look at all these great films he was in. And also, he is not Bill Pullman, no matter what anyone says.
Yes.
Park, what about Club Dread? You've seen that, I assume. Jones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I remember being entertained by that movie. He basically plays like a Jimmy Buffett-type character in it.
Yeah, it's like it's too long, but Bill Paxton is far and away the best thing in it.
Yeah, like he's singing songs and shit, and he's got his own like private island or whatever that people come to.
Yeah, well, as the song says, it's like, there's a little place where the sun sleeps late, pours itself a shot of tequila. There's a little place called Pleasure Island, that's where I want to feel ya. So basically, Bill Paxton dressed up as Jimmy Buffett, drunk the entire movie, talking like a pirate.
How is this not your favorite movie ever made?
Because it's too long and it's not really that funny. That was their big post Super Troopers movie.
Yep. Yeah. And that was the last time they did something that I think actually people remember. I guess they did that Dukes of Hazzard thing. That
the only thing anyone remembers from that movie is Bill Paxton and Brittany Daniels' abs. Everything else was blur. Parker, do you have any Bill Paxton memories you'd like to share with us? How did he touch your life?
It's just all the delivery. Like, just how he can say the most ridiculous thing and it just comes natural to him. Yeah, I think that would be it.
Oh, and there was Twister, too. Somehow we didn't even mention that. That's probably the one that most people have seen him in.
Oh, we mentioned it. And then
Well, maybe that was when my audio cut out or something.
He only has, like, a few good Paxton lines in that.
Well, he's got the liability only line.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that one.
That is the ultimate Paxton line, even though it makes no sense if you think about it.
It's so creepy. Oh, good.
Also, how many of these... He's got two movies that have been turned into pinball machines.
Oh, wait, no, just... And Apollo 13.
Nope. Terminator.
Terminator. Yeah,
he does show up briefly, and yeah, they never made one of the first Terminator.
Yeah, Terminator 2 and Terminator 3.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, whatever. Terminator
doesn't count.
Okay, so he's got two.
Aliens. Aliens.
Plus one custom one.
Oh yeah, and now that Alien game has that thing actually come out?
Actually, Hilton's getting his on Wednesday.
Oh, wow. So it actually exists.
Yeah, but does it actually have Bill Paxton's voice in it?
It does.
Okay.
Nice.
Because apparently the Bill Paxton pinball machine came up when they were talking to the lawyers because they had to renegotiate the usage of character speech with the actors from the movies for Aliens, the pinball machine. So that would put Bill Paxton in three different pinball machines.
What about...
Although Harrison Ford will beat him once Star Wars comes out.
He probably already beats him, doesn't he? There's like two Indiana Jones machines and there's...
Yeah, and like two Star Wars or... Yeah,
yeah there's two that he's in. Well, and there's that Empire Strikes Back one. I don't know if that
counts. I've never even seen that game.
There's the two... Like there's that special edition trilogy one and then there's...
Is there a Regarding Henry pinball machine?
I don't think so.
Well, there should be.
There's probably something else with Harrison. They never made a Blade Runner one, I guess.
Is there a Pat Benatar pinball machine yet?
Ted Nugent pinball machine.
Yeah, but he wasn't in a music video by Nugent.
Oh, that's right. Bill Paxton's in one of her videos.
Yep, that's why I brought it up.
Radio operator. Oh my god, I know way too much about Bill Paxton. so anyone listening to this, go to YouTube and search Martini Ranch Reach. Because Bill Paxton had a group called Martini Ranch, a ranch on which you drink martinis. And they had a song. Well, they had many songs. They're kind of like, they're kind of Oingo Boingo-ish in a way. But they had a song called Reach, like Reach for the Skies. And the video is directed by James Cameron, and it stars Bill Paxton. And Academy Award winner Catherine Bigelow was in it.
Oh, wow.
Actually, a bunch of Aliens actors are in it, so it's definitely worth a watch. Hmm. So you get to watch the first female best director winner stick a brand.
Wait, he plays Sam Houston in Texas Rising? I got to watch Texas Rising now.
Oh, yeah, isn't Sam Houston the guy who, like, founded Houston?
Kinda. He helped found... Texas-ish.
Kind of.
Texas history is kind of convoluted and.
Oh yeah, Alan Arkin was Uncle Lou Handler in Indian Summer.
Oh nice, Arkin's awesome.
You should check that movie out, Jones. You'd probably like it.
Yeah, it sounds like something I would find amusing.
Oh, Kimberly Williams was in it too. Holy crap! Elizabeth Perkins? Jesus, this is like a who's who of the 90s.
Yeah, because you said Julie Warner was in it, right?
Alan Arkin, Matt Craven, Diane Lane, Bill Paxton, Elizabeth Perkins, Kevin Pollak, Sam Raimi, Vincent Spano, Julie Warner, and Kimberly Williams.
Hmm.
Wow, what a great film. The guy prefers boner at camp. Let's see. Anything else we want to talk about with Bill Paxton? Apparently Chuck wants to try to retrieve that game now. And keep it at Spooky Pinball.
Oh, yeah. Who owns
it?
It's
up in the Twin Cities at Lloyd's.
Yeah, it's up at SS Billiards. Apparently it still works somehow. I don't know. I thought that thing would have broke years ago. Oh, it's horribly assembled.
Yeah, I figured once it went on location, it would, you know, run into trouble.
Oh, that pinball machine belongs in a museum.
I did run across Weird Science. Bill Paxton doesn't like it. Like, he's really embarrassed of that role.
Oh, good. How did we not remember that one? Or maybe
Chet?
Weird Science? God. Yeah, it's one of his most well-known roles, but I guess like he doesn't like to talk about
it. About a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray.
Now, if you watch so that, good. Like, the Stifler character from American Pie is basically just a Chet ripoff.
Pretty much, so, yeah.
Bill Paxton was the progenitor of that archetype. Oh, God, it's not like I'm writing a movie review here.
Yeah, what's the zeitgeist have to say about this? You gotta fit that in.
Well, you see, his character really fit the zeitgeist of the 80s.
Oh, Paxton.
Paxton will be forever missed. Maybe,
you ever
maybe...
watch Big Love?
I never have.
I haven't either. I've heard it's good, but never watched it.
Oh, is it? Oh, like, is this fake news? NCIS star sadly passes away at 61. There's a picture of some guy. I don't know who that is.
Well, that's right. Paxton was in some. I think he was in that show, like, as some sort of grizzled detective, I thought I read today. Like,
oh.
Like, he was actually actively in a show. But might have been that one.
Trending Day.
10 essential Bill Paxton roles we'll never forget. Weird Science, Aliens, Near Dark, False
Near
Move.
Near Dark, forgot about that.
One False Move is pretty good, too.
I haven't seen that one.
I think it's like he's like a southerner or something. Hmm. Oh, Simple Plan is good. Have you seen that? Oh, hey, that was directed by Sam Raimi, so there's your Indian Summer connection.
I have not watched that for some reason. I really have no good excuse for never having seen that movie.
I think it was actually filmed in Wisconsin.
That sounds right.
Yeah. It's basically this drug plane crashes in the middle of nowhere, and they pick up the bag of money, and then it ruins their lives. So it's kind of like old No Country for Old Men, but it's better because Bill Paxton's in it.
Does the movie actually end unlike that other movie? I don't like Old Country for Old Men or whatever it's called.
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah. It was so great.
That's the primary complaint people have with that movie is...
Yeah, it was so awesome, and then it's like... Bah! It's like, what is the conclusion?
Yeah, it kind of has a Sopranos ending before... Sopranos ended or whatever, I think, so.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I never watched that show either, but I only, you know, I just heard about people being bent about the ending of that.
Well, I don't know if he'll ever have another actor as great as Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton was always a bridesmaid and never a bride, but he had all the best lines at the dinner.
Yep.
Hey, I knew this guy back when he was whacking off in high school. Now we scored a hot babe like you.
Obviously, HBO knew he was awesome because they made him the lead in that show. So
there's like this only one actor cool enough to have three wives. Bill Paxton, the Mitt Romney story. All right, so... Shall we move on to the next topic?
Very well.
If we have to.
Oh, Jones, I got it. Bill Paxton, Fault Edition. Vaulted Disc.
Oh, and you re-release it?
Super LE.
Can't be more rare than the original, though.
That's true.
But you gotta re-record all the audio and take out all the original jokes.
We'll give you half of a game. That's how rare this thing is.
Yep. And it'll be manufactured by John Papaduke.
Oh, yes.
All right, so next topic. Battlefield 1. So it came out back in October, and Parker and I have been playing it quite a bit. Jones has been, you know, kind of not fulfilling his Call of Duty. But yeah, but it's pretty good. So I think we should discuss, is it like the best Battlefield in quite a while? Question mark?
It's definitely the best game and quite a while in the first-person multiplayer.
As far as, you mean like online multiplayer shooter?
Yeah, it's up there. In terms of like that style of semi-realistic shooter.
Yeah, because you're all into Overwatch, right?
Yeah, arena shooters, that's like a completely different thing. So I've been playing Battlefield since, I guess, the first one, which was 1942. And I still kind of regard that one as the best. Mainly because it was really arcadey. It didn't really stick too true to, you know, real-world physics or anything like that. Like, you could jump on an airplane on the wing and kind of, like, ride it on the wing like a circus, you know, show. And you could just do so much weird stuff in that game. And it seems that the Battlefield series has gone more and more realistic, which is fine. It's just I don't really like that kind of stuff. Okay. But that's actually what Battlefield 1 is good about, is it's set in a realistic setting like World War 1, but it's not like World War 1 at all.
Yeah, everyone's running around with automatic weapons for one thing.
Yeah, and there's no trench warfare. The tanks don't break down.
The guns are completely covered with mud, but they completely work fine.
And the horses, oh my god, they're unstoppable.
Yeah, they have horse armor, apparently.
Yeah, they've got the Oblivion horse armor, so.
They have horse fields.
I guess for me, I mean, I know I haven't played it much lately, but, I mean, it's the first, like, FPS online multiplayer game that I've played with any sort of, I don't know,
enjoyment
since Bad Company 2. Bad Company 2, I played, I know you guys played it way more than I did, but I think I had something like 250 hours into that game. And
that's all you had in Bad Company 2?
I think that's what it ended up being, was around that.
Oh, God, I think mine's a lot worse than that.
Yeah, mine's way higher.
I could check my origin right now. It's probably embarrassingly worse.
I know if I went and added up my playtime for all of my Old Republic characters, it would probably be incredibly depressing, so I've never done it.
The thing about Bad Company 2 is, it's even funny when DICE is talked about too, who are the makers of the Battlefield series right now, they don't even know why that game was so good.
Maybe they don't, but I think Battlefield 1 has kind of gotten closer. I think Battlefield 1 is better than 3 and 4 and Hardline. And I wrote down some ideas why I think it's better.
Yeah, it's definitely better than those. Because I tried 3 and 4, and I played them a bit, but they're just too armor-heavy, and I don't give a shit about that stuff, and I never bothered with Hardline.
Hardline was the biggest waste of $60 I've ever spent.
I got it for 40, and it was still a waste. Well, okay, here's some things I wrote down that I was thinking about. So, one thing that hurt Battlefield 3 was that it was a last-gen game. Remember, it came out, 2011? And we should have been on a new console generation by 2011, but we weren't. So, you know, basically, the PC version of that game had to work on the same kind of hardware as a old-ass Xbox 360. So I think that's why you had a lot of, like, city maps where you couldn't go into the buildings. Everything was just a tunnel.
Right. Destructible environment stuff was really nerfed in that too.
Superficial.
Yeah, especially when you compare it to Bad Company. Yeah.
But then if you look at Bad Company 2 and Battlefield 1, you notice that all the towns, they just have like three or four buildings, and they just rotate them and color them differently and move them around. And it's just, which is exactly what Bad Company 2 did. And
yeah, but awesome. Because you can blow the shit out of them.
I would rather have like just generic farmhouses and barns that I can destroy versus like, ooh, a really intricately designed oil rig. And that was the thing, like in Battlefield 3 and 4, all the locations were like places that didn't feel real. It's like you're fighting in an oil rig, you're fighting on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, the oil refinery map.
Yeah, everything was just like bullshit. Whereas Battlefield 1, it's like, this is Paris, this is a small town, this is a palace. Everything felt like a real place.
You know, you say that, and you know what reminds me, even though this is a different war, the maps remind me of the HBO series Band of Brothers. Like, how the maps look.
Different war, same place.
Well, yeah, it's same place. But yeah, it looks that way. It has that feel, which is nice.
Yeah, like when you're fighting in Paris, like, oh, look, we're in Paris because there's the Cathedral of Notre Dame in the background. And yeah, it's like, it makes it feel real. I think that's another thing, like, all these modern warfare games are all these fake wars they make up. Like, oh, Russia's fighting China, China's fighting America, America's fighting Russia. It's all bullshit. Or Battlefield 1, even if you have soldiers standing on top of planes and all that stupid, like, you know, dolphin diving bullshit, I mean, it was still a real war with real weapons. And that just makes it feel more tangible, even if the game is obviously fluff and, you know, hyper-realistic.
Yep. But yeah, the gunplay in Battlefield 1 is actually good. I think this is the thing, is the big problem with Battlefield 3 and 4 is you had to aim down the sights, which I don't like doing. I'm a spray and pray, you know, hit fire guy, and Bad Company 2, you could do that easily. And then you couldn't do that in 3 and 4. And then in this game, they kind of brought that back. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. When you aim down the sights, it slows the game down. I don't know why people like that stuff.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've noticed with the guns is you know, not only do they... Well, they feel more satisfying than the other Battlefield games. I mean, like, DICE has really good sound design. They've always had really good sound design. But in Battlefield 1, they've really, you know, married that with really... I mean, it feels like you're firing weapons, you know, even though obviously you have no tactile feedback.
And well, no, like, the visual aspect is so good now.
Yeah, yeah, but even, like, it just feels like you're in the world. Because, like, when you... If you're in a big map and you fire, like, a sniper rifle, you hear the echo in the mountains, and, like, that's what it actually sounds like. You know, that sounds realistic. And, like, it... Yeah, there's, like... weight to everything.
Yeah, everything feels heavy.
Yeah, and another thing that I like is...
But the thing is, it feels heavy, but you don't slow... Your character's not slow because of it.
Yeah, and another thing, I remember in Battlefield 3 and 4, where the support class... They switched it around. The support class, they would drop ammo instead of assault. But then the only kind of guns support class got were like those huge, big machine guns with like the huge clips, and they weren't really that much fun to use.
Yeah.
But now, like in Battlefield 1, the support class, you can have like, you know, you can have like the Madsen or the BAR, or if you want a huge gun, you can get like the MG15. But there's actually a variety. It's like if in Battlefield 1, if the only kind of gun the support class could use would be the MG15, then it would be just like Battlefield 3 and 4, but it's not. You can have more of a lighter run and gun weapon in Battlefield 1, and it makes it a lot more fun. It just seems like the weapon variety is better for each one of the classes. If anything's limited, I would say it's almost like the assault class is a little limited in Battlefield 1.
Yeah, the problem with the assault class in Battlefield 1 is the there's zero utility besides just killing someone.
Well, same.
Well, no, you can take out tanks. I take that back. You kill people and you take out tanks, because you're the only class that actually has anti-tank weaponry.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool if the assault class could maybe get, like, a small ammo pouch. Because the support class and the medic class can drop ammo pouches and, like, you know, passively get points for assisting their teammates. I guess snipers can shoot their flares and spot people.
Yeah, so I guess assault doesn't have any passive way of getting points.
No, I mean everything. You had to basically kill people or take flags or blow up tanks. I don't know how far you got into it, Parker, but yeah, it takes a while. Like Battlefield 1, it really sucks. It's like a real war. All you do is get killed over and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, I've never been killed so much in a multiplayer game except in Battlefield 1.
But once you get, once you open up new guns, then the game just becomes super fun.
Yep, that was
it's
the same
about
way.
20 hours.
Yeah, it's the same thing. When I first started playing, I hated the game until I got first couple unlocks, and then I'm like, okay, once you finally find that one gun that you figured out how the recoil pattern works or how do you kill that enemy on your screen? And when you figure that out, it becomes so much more fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I don't know, it's really satisfying. I also apparently they're going to nerf some of the grenades in the
good
update. I guess kind of, but I like how like every class basically has the ability to like blow holes in things. And you know, if you feel like you have an effect on the environment, like you don't feel like you're in like a static corridor like you did in Battlefield 3. You feel like you're in a real living destroyable place. And I think that adds a lot of texture too, because that was a big thing in when we played Bad Company 2 all the time. Like, oh look, people are like camping up this building. Let's level the building.
Well, we had the squad awesome tree removal service.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just go in and demolish all the trees in the map, and then sit on the high point and just rain fire down upon everyone.
I kind of wish you could destroy the buildings the same way in Battlefield 1. Like you can like basically blow a building to a shell, but there isn't the point like there was in Bad Company 2 where the building like falls in upon itself and you can kill people in it. I mean, you can kill people with debris. It's just really rare.
Yeah, actually, that's true. I haven't seen some of the bigger buildings fall down.
If enough debris falls on you when your building's being destroyed, you can be killed by it in Battlefield 1. It's killed by debris.
Barns fall down and sheds, but I don't think like some of the two-story buildings fall down in Battlefield 1.
No, like some buildings have indestructible walls. Although I don't know if you noticed it, Parker, but some buildings, depending on what mode you're in, the level of available destruction changes.
Yep.
Like the pigeon mode, is like the highest destruction actually.
Yeah, pigeon mode is actually my favorite mode in Battlefield now.
That's weird.
It's such a fun mode. I guess because it's so different. It's like capture the flag, except it's like capture and camp the flag, and then yeah, then you have to release the pigeon. The problem is they make the hitbox for that pigeon too easy to hit.
Yeah, so when the pigeon's released, it should like if you manage to release a pigeon, then you should get the point. Because if there's two teams that are really good at shooting down the enemy's pigeon, like we had a round last for like, what, 45 minutes one time?
Yeah, it was about 45, 50 minutes.
They should make it like if you release a pigeon, the barrage goes no matter what. And it should be like 5 out of 5 instead of 3 out of 5. That would probably be more balanced. Because otherwise, if you just did 3 out of 3, the rounds might be too short.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jones, you should like play it some more because it's pretty fun.
I will get back in there one of these days.
Will you be out there getting in there?
Apparently.
He's going to step it up to the Battlefield streets.
Somebody's got to do it.
Step up to the streets.
Indeed.
Yeah, anything else you want to discuss with Battlefield, Parker?
I still don't think it's as good as 1942 was, but I think it's better than Bad Company 2 is now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll see what the first DLC does. The only thing, it doesn't have the Carl Gustav rocket launcher.
That's got the rocket gun, though.
It's got the rocket gun, but the rocket gun is still janky, because you have to go into prone, and you have
to... Or a window.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they did that to nerf it, you know, so it wasn't as rapeable as.
Well, yeah, because it's like
jumping around, firing off a rocket gun.
Whee!
Rocket guns.
Those were still the best times when, like, all four of us would just be running around with Carls. There was that one map where you were up on the hill, and then there was like one piece of armor on it. Then there were some buildings, and then there was like docks down at the bottom.
Yeah, that was the new old Birthright map.
And I just remember us running around up on that hillside, just raining down Carls all the time. It was That's awesome.
Yeah, I would say the, I mean, they remember like Battlefield 3 and 4, they didn't have a medic class. Remember, it was like assault, support,
yeah,
engineer, and then sniper.
Sniper.
There's always a fucking sniper class. You can never get rid of
it. If that's one thing DICE can do, is just get rid of that class.
That'll never happen. Never happen.
Because the sniper class is the one way to turn a multiplayer game into a single player game.
I was ever in Bad Company 2 that the sniper had that
ghillie suit.
Well, it had like the probe thing or whatever that they could drop, and then it would
sniper
pick
ball.
Up. And we'd always call that the heartbeat of a pussy when you'd hear the little beep thing go off for it.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, Battlefield 1, where they have an assault class with a bunch of bombs, and then a support class that can resupport bullets, that is a little bit more balanced. Because if unless you're in an infantry map on Bad Company 2, I guess the support class, you get the Carl Gustav.
No, that's engineer. Engineer gets the Carl Gustav.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah, good. Well, there's no support class, so yeah, it's engineer. But I don't know, maybe because, like, I think in general, there seems to be less vehicles in Battlefield 1, which is a good thing, because Battlefield 4, there was way too many.
Well, they rebalanced
the engineer is less important.
Well, they rebalanced the vehicles where, like, if you're in a city and there's a tank, you can easily just run to the other side of the building and the tank can't do anything to you. Whereas in Battlefield 4 and 3, that tank can kill you no matter where that tank is at and where you're at.
Well, then think about it. Like especially like the Paris map, or while they call it Saint Amiens. Like, it actually feels like a real city. Like, you can go down alleyways, you can go behind buildings. And
you can go almost every single building.
Yeah, I mean, there's actual depth to the map. Whereas, yeah, everything in Battlefield 3, especially Battlefield 3, was like just a bunch of corridors. Battlefield 4 wasn't that much better.
Well, the problem with Battlefield 4 was the map size. There's too much open space, and so
yeah,
the tanks
spend
could
all
get
your time. Yeah, and you'd spend all your time running toward an objective or running toward a vehicle, and that never seems to happen in Battlefield 1.
Well, in Battlefield 1, what they did is they put a lot of, like, let's say Conquest. Is there's a couple that are out in the middle of nowhere flags, but then they group a whole bunch together in, like, a city. And so if you fight for all those, you can still win the map. You don't have to go to the ones out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. It just doesn't seem... In Battlefield 1, you don't seem to spend a lot of time running to an objective just to die. You can usually spawn pretty close to something. And that's definitely an improvement over 3 and 4.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, if you haven't tried Battlefield 1, definitely give it a try. It's, yeah, Parker and I highly recommend it. It'll suck for about the first 20 hours, but if you can get through those first 20 hours, it becomes bliss.
20 hours. So, Ben, when are we going to get the check from DICE and EA Games?
Well, maybe they'll send it to us via PayPal. Well, I made a controller monitor for them years ago, so technically I have gotten a check from DICE.
Ah.
All right. So our next subject in today's podcast, I have never played Mass Effect.
I want to say we did talk about Mass Effect like a couple podcasts ago a little bit, because there was, I think it was in the Steam sale, like the old ones. I think it was the first one Parker was on, and
yeah.
We tried to
this.
Convince you and failed, apparently. So.
Doesn't Origin have like Mass Effect, like you can get one of them for free or something?
I think you get the first one or a second one for free.
Probably the first, you know, that way they give you a taste.
So, the new one's Andromeda that's coming out, and it would be a good point for Ben to actually get into the series. I don't, because you don't have to pay to play the first three.
Right.
It's a separate story, it's a new galaxy or whatnot, so. Ben always complains about, like, not having good stories or, you know, all that.
I complain about that in movies, not video games.
Well, you don't play anything besides... If it doesn't have Battlefield in the title, Ben doesn't play it.
No, or you're confusing me with Mike. But I have
played Uncharted
and
stuff, so...
See, that's the thing. He'll play Uncharted, but he won't play Mass Effect.
Yeah, and Uncharted 4 had way too much effing story. It's like, they're like, ooh, we want to be filmmakers, not game makers. And
Well, the thing I think the thing with Mass Effect, like for Ben, maybe is like, I don't know. Ben doesn't seem you don't seem like a big like RPG guy or whatever. Like you, I mean, you play Oblivion and Skyrim and stuff like that.
Is it Oblivion in space?
No.
But the thing is, people say it's an RPG, and
it has
elements, but it's not like I need to increase my strength by clicking this button. It's not like that at all. It's like the only RPG elements are like getting new abilities and changing weapons. And I mean, that's about it.
I just think if I would have played it from the start, like the fact that I didn't start playing it 10 years ago like Jones did, just feels like I don't want to jump in like I've already missed the boat. Or
I would play the new one that's coming out, play that one, and if you like the story and universe and want more, go back and play 1, 2, and 3, because there's a ton of content. Those games are... The first one, it shows its age a bit, because came out on the crappy, it was console generation of the Xbox 360, so it doesn't look too good in terms of textures.
Right.
But there are texture mods for the PC version, and yeah. I mean, I actually just finished playing, I think I played the first one 2 years ago, and I thought it was fine.
Yeah, that's the one. I know I've said it multiple times. I wish that, they bring out all these goddamn remasters of these various games. It's like, remaster the damn Mass Effect series. It's like,
oh yeah,
I would buy it again and play through it again if they did.
I think the biggest thing that's going to hurt Ben if he does that, if he plays Andromeda and then goes back to play Mass Effect 1, is the game plays different.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think playing the new one and going back would work.
Because it does play different, and then in Mass Effect 2, they kind of got their stride in terms of how the game mechanics work, and then 3 is when they kind of really tightened the screws and polished the windows a bit.
Well, and 2 also, like, I would say 1 is definitely more RPG-ish, and then streamlined a lot of stuff in the second one, like, they simplified a lot of that. Because, like, in the first one, you go around to planets and, like, gather materials,
resources and stuff,
things
yeah.
like that, yeah, and they kind of stripped a lot of that away, and then the way your abilities progress, they simplified a lot of that in the second one, which was great. I mean, the second one's just a phenomenal game, and
yeah, I actually agreed with that decision where, like, I didn't really, sure, like, landing on a planet and exploring it was fun, but it took so much time to do that, and
well, there wasn't really anything all that interesting about the planets that you were going and harvesting resources from.
Yeah,
and it wasn't that compelling. I mean, it's like, this is kind of fun, but, you didn't want to sit there and do it for an hour either.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, that reminds me of something. Are you guys getting tired of crafting in games?
Yes.
It depends. Like, in MMOs, it's like a staple of it, but I guess I haven't really encountered it a lot in
Fallout,
other games. Like
Fallout
Tomb Raider,
4. Oh, God.
I guess Tomb Raider sort of has it. I mean, it's not really, but, you just have to, like,
make bandages.
Yeah.
I played through the last Tomb Raider that just came out, a year ago?
Yeah.
And I don't remember crafting anything.
You have to craft bandages.
Yeah, and it's more like you gather stuff to, like, progress weapons and things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't call that crafting.
I actually don't remember building bandages, but I was pretty good at that game, Ben, so I didn't get hurt.
Wow. Wow.
Well, he sure told you.
I got served just now.
That's another really good game with a good story is the Tomb Raider reboot series.
Well, now it's going to be a movie with Ex Machina.
Oh, boy.
Wife of Magneto.
Wait, in real life?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and he was in Assassin's Creed.
That's right. I forgot about that movie. Damn it.
Wait, everyone that movie did. Come out?
Yeah,
it came out at Christmas.
Oh, I completely forgot about it.
Good, apparently.
And it fell on its face, as expected, I guess, but...
Well, what about the World of Warcraft movie?
I enjoyed it. And GoldenEye
Idea it was out.
It came out last year. I mean, it made, like, what, 45 million U.S., but, like, in China, it made, like, 200-something.
A zillion dollars?
Globally, it made, like, 400-something. Like, it made enough globally that they'll probably make another one and just target it at, like, China or something.
That's what they've talked about doing, yeah.
But, as somebody who's actually played the games and stuff, it's, like, there's a lot of, like, fun stuff in it. And even, like, our friend Dale and all that, like, he's never played the games or anything, and, like, him and his wife watched it, and they said they enjoyed it and, you know, had no trouble following the story or anything like that. And
All right.
I mean, it's got some, you know, kind of cheesy acting moments and stuff in it, but for the most part, it's pretty well done. The effects are really good.
Is there any Leroy Jenkins in it?
I don't think there's any Leroy Jenkins references in it, but
so it's not following Warcraft lore then.
There's lots of like really neat details in it. Like if you've ever played, I mean, it's actually based more around like the old RTS games.
Oh,
but,
so
I
like
mean,
Warcraft 2 and 3.
Like the first one more, I think, as far as like the timeline. But I mean, there's elements of that stuff that's in, like, World of Warcraft as well, and so there's just neat stuff, like, when he flies into Stormwind, like, where he flies the Griffin in and lands, that's actually the same spot where the taxi-type terminal, or whatever you want to call it, like, the flight terminal is in World of Warcraft when you fly into Stormwind. Like, there's just little shit like that, that if you've played the game, you're going to be like, oh, that's, like, a cool touch, you know, that they left that the same, you know, where somebody who's never played it, you know, would be like, oh, okay, whatever, he's flying into this big castle. So
what's your elevator pitch for why I should play Mass Effect?
Choice matters in it. So, like, if you care about that sort of thing.
It's not like BioShock or any of those other games where your choices are completely inconsequential. Also, Fallout 4.
Yep.
Yeah, there's like to me the big selling points for Mass Effect are like story, choice, and it's
the characters.
The characters are all very well developed. You actually like for me anyway, I actually like gave a shit about them. So like when you get to points in the game, there's parts where you have to make choices and you don't know, like everybody might not make it through.
Yeah.
And
now
in some cases they don't, you know, and so you have to kind of like weigh that when you're playing it. So like I toiled over choices in that game far more than I have in any other game series I've ever played. So
I do have a rebuttal for Ben when he brought up BioShock and not having choices. That's actually the point of that story, Ben.
Is that you don't have choices?
You don't have a choice because of how you know, spoiler alert, I guess, it's the whole, like, you were genetically engineered and, you know,
oh, yeah. And it's all a play on, like,
would you know, kindly
playing,
thing.
Playing a video game and your agency within it. I just mean, like, there's, you know, oh, if you're good or bad to, like, the Little Sisters, there's a different ending, but the different ending is entirely superficial.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in Mass Effect, it matters.
All right. And doesn't it carry over with your game saves, too?
Yes, and that was a really cool thing that they did is, yeah, your character came across, and so, like, certain decisions would affect, like, the next game, so it would remember, like, oh, you made this choice back here, and maybe this character hates you, or maybe this character didn't make it, whatever, and so that would carry through.
As opposed to Fallout 4, where nothing of that sort mattered at all.
No. Well,
to almost a laughable extent.
And Fallout 4, you could, like, you know, join the synths, and, like, all your friends that absolutely hated the synthetics would be okay with that.
Yep.
It's like, okay.
They're like, I can't believe you did that. And then a few minutes later, they'd be like, you're my best friend. yeah, it's pretty inconsistent. Well, you know, I was thinking I have some Best Buy reward certificates. Maybe I'll buy this Mass Effect Andromeda game. The only reason I want to get it is just so people stop telling me to play Mass Effect.
But then they'll be like, oh, you only played Andromeda? You fool.
No, if Ben plays, at least gives this new one a chance, I'll stop.
I'll never stop because I'm me.
No. All right. Well, I'll think about it. So yeah.
I'll say the second Mass Effect game out of the first three definitely has the best story though.
Yeah, it's one of the best games ever made, in my opinion.
It's all about like getting all your friends back or all your teammates back from the first game and recombining them into your new team. And it's just like all the little pockets of stories of like, because everyone left your team and then you have to go find them and then you go into that world that they live in. That's what's really cool about it.
And they've got that whole, like, what's the dude's name who's sitting in front of, like, the... There's, like, a big sun in the background behind him, and it's,
the
like...
Smoking Man!
Yeah. I can't remember what his name is in the game, but... and it's voiced by, what is it, William Devane? I can't remember, but... Yeah, it's just really good. I mean, it's, like, excellent sci-fi.
Elusive Man.
Yeah, there you go, the Elusive Man.
I was calling the Smoking Man after the X-Files. Yeah. Because he's always smoking.
But it's like, I don't know, to me, you know, like, I know I've mentioned this before, but it's like, you know, they keep talking about, you know, Hollywood loves, like, franchises and all this shit, and they keep trying to make, like, a video game movie and stuff. It's like, to me, like, Mass Effect is, like, the most obvious. I mean, granted, it's going to cost some money to do it right, but it's like, if you do that right, you know, you're talking about something that, probably a bit of an overstatement to say it could be another Star Wars, but it's that
It'd
scale. It's like that scale of
lore and
lot, yeah, into like the whole universe behind it. And there's just a lot there that they could explore.
Like the whole where the what's the Garrus? What's his alien race name? It starts with T.
Oh God!
But like that was like the first contact that the humans have in that universe, and they go into like an all-out war, and like basically almost the human race dies out from it.
Yeah, I can't remember what their name is, but yeah, there's like all these different alien races, and they're all really well developed.
They have really good backstories and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. It's like yeah, I mean it's my favorite game series of all time. Like. Hands down. So.
See, I'm the other side, though. I like their... It's same company, BioWare, their Dragon Age series.
Yeah,
and that's the same thing. It's just a different setting. It's a, you know, fantasy setting, but it's the same. Like, characters are really developed. Everyone has really good backstories. All the factions have really good lore. Like, basically, whoever writes the lore for a BioWare game, they do a really, really good job.
Yeah, they have really good story people, so.
All right, maybe I'll give Andromeda a shot. Okay, so it has space, aliens, are there explosions in it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of explosions.
It's got, I mean, it hits a lot of, like, your check boxes, which is, I think, why people are kind of confused when they find out, like, you haven't played any of them, because it's... You know, a lot of that stuff is stuff that you enjoy, so...
Okay. Is it like Roadhouse in space?
There is some sort of part where you go to, like, a bar, like a dive bar thing to, like, get information or whatever, but I don't think, like, Patrick Swayze's there. Or Charlize.
You can probably mod that in.
Yeah. All right, well, maybe I'll consider it. So, our... final topic tonight is we're going to once again briefly, because I think we're using up a lot of time here, talk about the Switch. Switch.
You mean the Zelda player.
The Zelda adapter, yes.
The Zelda adapter.
That's
for
all
your
anyone's talking about is Zelda.
That's that. I think I said this last podcast or two podcasts ago is that is why they pushed Zelda to come out on release date, because no one was going to give a shit otherwise.
When did the last Zelda game come out?
Skyward Sword?
Skyward Sword, and it was on the Wii.
11?
Wow, it's been that long.
Yep.
Wow.
And from everyone that's got pre-release copies of this Zelda game, they're saying it is the best one ever, which is going to be pushing it, because there's a lot of very good Zelda games.
Oh, which means it'll be half as good as Skyrim.
You know, Skyrim is still the game I've not finished yet.
I didn't finish Skyrim either. I played the shit out of Oblivion, but Skyrim, I just couldn't get hooked.
See, yeah, that was something. Skyrim never hooked me either.
I like the world of Fallout better than Skyrim, but Skyrim, I played the hell out of it, but I just couldn't finish it. There's just too much stuff to do. Whereas in Fallout, it's pretty easy to do like all the missions, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I never like I personally think the best Fallout game is New Vegas.
Yeah.
I never played that one.
And it's just the setting is.
Well, just, the story and the characters and the writing are all really strong too.
Yeah. Whereas Fallout 3 is pretty good, and the New Vegas just took it to another level.
Unfortunately, New Vegas was hella buggy when it was released.
Yeah, I never really had any problems with it, and I actually had a lot of problems with Fallout 4 running. So
on PC.
On PC.
Yeah. Fallout New Vegas was one of the buggiest games I've ever played. I mean, it definitely earned that reputation.
Yep. But we're talking about Switch, right?
Oh yeah, Zelda.
Zelda. In theory.
So mine shows up on Friday, so I'll probably play it that night.
And he'll take it to the pre-played or GameStop on Saturday.
Return it.
Yep. We'll see. I mean, how many? It's like every generation Nintendo loses more third party. It's like every time Paul McCartney gets divorced, he loses half of his fortune. I mean, how many times can you really do that?
Until you're down to $1.
But that's okay because all you need is love, and $1 billion. If I had $1 billion, I would be Paul McCartney.
I think it just comes down to is the people who buy. They don't buy a Nintendo. It's not like, oh, Microsoft came out with a new Xbox. Let's go buy it. And you go, oh, there's a new Zelda game. What? Or a new Mario game. What console do I need to buy to play it? I think it's just I agree with Ben, with what he's about to say, is it should be on. They should stop making hardware, at least home consoles at least, and put it on PC. That way I have to spend less money.
See, we're at least not the only people saying this, because at work, like a week ago, there was a new developer that started, and a bunch of us started talking, so we're all gamers, and somehow Nintendo came up, maybe because of the Switch, I don't know, but this developer was like, I don't get why they don't just turn into a software company and quit making hardware and all that, and I'm like, yes,
so
thank you.
The last I'll put this for the last company to do that was Sega.
Yeah, but
and
Sega
they
haven't
as strong of IP as Nintendo.
But they haven't made a good. They haven't made a good Sonic game since like what Sonic 2.
I was a big Genesis guy and all that, and I mean I bought the Dreamcast day one. But it's like even I will admit comparing like Sega IP to Nintendo IP, it's like there's no contest between the two.
Exactly. But I would agree is if they went to close. If they I think they should. If they want to keep their own portable system, that's fine, because there's really no one competing in that market, and they do really well in making the DS or Game Boy or whatever. But on the home console, you know,
it's kind of like when Microsoft bought Nokia and decided to enter the cell phone war. It's like Microsoft was entering a war they'd already lost.
Yeah.
And looking at the PlayStation 4 is just gangbusters. It's like the fastest selling console of all time. It's like 2-1 beating the Xbox One. It's already a runaway with this generation. And there's no way the Nintendo can compete with that. I'm sure what Nintendo's thinking in the back of its mind is like, oh, if we can do 3DS numbers with the Switch, then we could technically beat the PlayStation 4, but I just don't see it.
I don't
because it's too physically big.
But that's the thing is you're always
the problems.
Is you're always comparing Nintendo consoles to PS4 console or whatever. I don't think Nintendo even thinks about that. They don't even care. They know that their demographic is going to buy their console for their IP. That's it. And if they they make a profit on the hardware, so it doesn't even matter. Now, is that saying it's a waste of effort? Probably. but it's not like they're losing money on the hardware.
I don't know. I have a hard time believing they sold as many Wii U's as they wanted to.
I would agree with that, too.
That was their worst-selling console ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Virtual Boy?
That doesn't count.
Yeah, man.
Then the guy who designed the Virtual Boy, I think he committed suicide.
No, he didn't commit suicide, but he was ostracized from the company for doing it. I think it's the same guy who invented the Game Boy, too, so it shows you how quickly your fortunes can change.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's you know, I'll put it this way. I'd love to play Zelda on the PC. I'd pay more for the game, too, if I could buy it on PC.
I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of people like Jones and I who... Remember, we played all the Nintendo stuff back when we were, like, young. And maybe... Okay, yeah, I mean, you probably agree with this, Jones. Like, I might consider playing the Zelda if I could play it on my PlayStation 4.
Oh, sure.
But if I have to buy another console that I care nothing about for it, I'm never going to give it a chance. I think there's a lot of people like me out there.
I would agree. And I could see Nintendo putting Mario and Zelda on the Xbox before the PlayStation.
Never.
Just because of the whole Sony Nintendo debacle in the mid 90s.
Nope. Never happened because Sony is a Japanese company. They would go exclusive Sony before they went exclusive Xbox.
I think that's the reason why they wouldn't go Sony is because they're a Japanese company. It'd be losing face.
No, I disagree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, the only way they'd go exclusive Xbox is if Microsoft bought them.
You know, how much is Nintendo worth?
Their market cap?
Yeah, what's their...
I don't know. It's probably like 40 or 50 billion. It would make more sense than buying LinkedIn?
Well, yeah, LinkedIn and Nokia. If they wouldn't have like bought either of those, that would have went a long way toward buying Nintendo.
Nintendo's market cap.
But
I'm googling it right now. See what it is.
I mean, yeah. If you were Microsoft and you wanted to do a complete atomic bomb, scorched earth maneuver, you would buy Nintendo.
Nintendo's market cap is $42 billion right now.
Oh, I was pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, like. The Switch, oh, and it was half that last summer before Pokemon Go hit.
Yep, Pokemon Go was the...
Which means if the Switch doesn't do what they're hoping, I mean, that could change very quickly, and they could be put in a position of weakness.
Yep.
And if Microsoft chooses to continue in the video game arena, which they may not, I mean, their investors may have had enough, but if they do choose, like, the atomic salvo against Sony could be to acquire the Nintendo IP.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy, but we live in a world where a real estate reality show star is president.
Yeah.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's like...
No,
we've talked about that for years, that it's like, you know, if Microsoft really wanted to... Especially back when Nintendo was in a weaker position, you know, it made more sense.
You mean a weaker position?
Wii U. Sure.
You know, they basically just buy them for their IP. You know, yep. It's like...
Well, and their game developers.
Yeah, I mean, they would get all that too, you know, but it's, you know, essentially it's just like how companies, you know, like these big companies buy others just for their patents and things. And
well, people love to talk about... They love to talk about Nintendo having, like, you know, $8 billion in cash or whatever, and that doesn't mean anything. I mean, BlackBerry had that much money in cash 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like Microsoft and Apple would laugh at that number for, like, cash on hand. Like,
right, right. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but, I mean, if your company, if they really went belly up, or, I mean, if the Switch, like, just outright flopped, which it could.
It could.
They could burn through that very quickly, because that's my concern with the Switch. I don't think it's going to be too big and have too poor of a battery for a portable. And then it's going to be too weak to be a home console. I mean, look at it. They're not killing the 3DS line. If they really had confidence in the 3DS line, they would. Oh, I'm sorry. If they really had confidence in the Switch, they wouldn't have killed the 3DS line, or they would be killing it.
I would agree.
Here's something else. I also have this conspiracy theory, the Nintendo Classic. Why did they not make more of those? I wonder if there's some sort of like internal politics going on at their company where they're like, oh, we could have made money hand over fist with this, but we don't want to make, you know, the Switch look bad, so let's limit the number of these. Like they shipped a laughably small number of those things.
Or yeah, that, or they want to make more money on, like, they make more money on, like, the virtual console. And
I just, we did a teardown on one of those last week. There's nothing.
It's got an ARM processor in there, right?
Yep, it's an ARM, a RAM, flash, an HDMI chip. That's it. I mean, you're probably, so it's basically a $60.
I like how Ben does say that's it, but like 20 years ago, that would like blow people's minds.
Yeah, it's weird. It's got like
I mean, that's what the Xbox has. The Xbox got a power supply, a GPU, a CPU, and a hard drive. That's it.
And that's it.
What were they thinking?
It's got like what is it? It's got like it's actually got quite a bit of RAM in it. It's got, I want to say it's got like 512 megs of RAM, something like that. It's,
well, does it hold all the games locally, or does it connect? I have no idea.
No, it has a 4 gigabyte flash, and I think it's 4. I can't remember. So remember, we had a guest star, and I was explaining how gigabits and gigabytes are different. So,
you mean one is 8 times the other?
Exactly. I want to say it's like 256 meg RAM, 512 meg cache, or I'm sorry, NAND flash. It was beefier than I thought it would be. I would just say that. But still, at $60, they're just printing money with that thing. Why not print more? That was my thing.
Actually, I think that's how Nintendo came up at work the other day, as somebody mentioned that thing.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. Nintendo could print money if they went straight software, because they would just open up how many people could get to their software.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like Ben said earlier. You know,
I guess my opinion is I don't really care. Except I'd rather play it on PC because I know the graphics would be better than the Switch. But I'm going to buy whatever hardware to play those games. So I guess that's my opinion.
Like, for me, it's like Ben said before, it's like, if they, let's say they stopped making consoles at the GameCube and they just went software after that, between then and now, I'm sure I would have bought at least a handful of like Mario and Zelda games in that time,
as opposed to zero.
Yes.
I would say I do prefer the GameCube controller over the Xbox controller and the PlayStation controller.
Ugh.
I thought the GameCube controller was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, here, Jones, I have an analogy for this. You know how they're talking about how this video on demand new release movie thing is probably going to happen?
Okay.
Have you read about this?
I haven't paid much attention, but it doesn't surprise me.
Pretty much every studio but Disney is on board now.
Nice.
And they're just working out a deal with the distributors. The price is still too high, but I think if it's too low, then they would just kill theaters immediately.
Yeah.
So, like, 17 days after release, basically, like, the second Monday after a movie's released, you can get a 48-hour rental for $50.
Wow.
Actually, the thing is, if you have a family, that's a deal.
Oh, yeah.
If you're single, you're boned.
Right, but
plus you got like a bunch of friends and you have them come over, you know,
yeah,
and you make a deal out of it or whatever.
But single people going to movies by themselves is the minority of customers, so they don't give a shit.
That's true.
But my point,
I'm
my
not the
point
only
is,
single person that goes to movies in Houston, so
my point is those families are already not going to movies.
Yep.
And so why not, you know, see if you can get some money from them? And I think that's the same way as, like, you know, Nintendo's already not getting this money from people, and they're like, okay, well, if you want to buy this $60 game, you've also got to buy this $300 console you don't want.
Yeah.
And if they remove that, I guess just like DVD, just like streaming, it's like one of those things, like, Nintendo's going to fight that to the very end, right up until they do it, and then make money hand over fist, and then people are going to be like, why didn't they do this 10 years ago?
Yep.
I personally think the Switch is going to suck, And that's, I mean, I think this is coming sooner than later. And people say it'll never happen. That's bullshit. People never thought IBM would be on the ropes.
Or people thought BlackBerry.
Or Apple. I mean, back like 20 years ago, Apple was like a corpse. You know, everything can change.
Yep.
All right. Well, that was quite the podcast. Tell us what you think of our opinions in the comments below. If you think we're correct, or if we're only slightly correct, or just how correct we were.
Do you actually read those, Ben?
I don't think we have comments on this website, actually. I just like to say that.
Old habits all right. I heard.
Echo chamber.
All right. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Adios, people.